Why are you here? What is driving you if it isn't God?
Could be God. Could be my dead wife. Could be my guilty conscience.
Well, then isn't that God? Isn't God working through you?
Sure. You can't prove it. I can't disprove it. And as they wrote in the Book of Mormon, that's kind of what God was going for, right?
The Book of Mormon.
The musical.
Welcome to Eyes on Gilead, an SBS podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out after every episode. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm Head of Curation at SBS On Demand, and I'm joined, once again, by my colleagues, friends, and fellow resistors. Heidi Island, Channel Manager at SBS On Demand.
Hello.
Sana Kadar, host of All in the Mind on ABC Radio National.
Hi.
And Natalie Hambly, journalist turned gemologist.
Hi.
Hello. Today we're going to recap episode 3 of season 6 of The Handmaid's Tale, and it is called Devotion. It was written by Nina Fior and John Herrera and directed by David Lester. And we've got a little story about David Lester coming up later in the episode. June struggles to save her loved ones.
They could get killed. I don't give a fuck what happens to me.
Commander Lawrence welcomes diplomats to New Bethlehem.
Here, we've liberalized without spilling a drop of blood.
And Aunt Lydia searches for Janine.
I didn't think you'd come.
Well, I received your message. I have to see for myself.
So we got Lydia, we got Janine. Couple of things in this one. Episode 3. Let's go around the room. What stood out? Let's start with you, Heidi.
I'm going to go with a small moment that made me very happy, which was the really awkward little like fist bump farewell between Nick and Luke at the end of the episode.
Because I've like been a bro hug.
Yeah, it was just so cute to watch after like all of this build up of what will happen when if these two men meet, and then it was so cute and teenage and awkward.
Meet again. They've met previously.
Sorry, meet again. Sorry, it was so just cute and awkward. I loved that moment.
It was good. Yeah, Luke was so cagey when he saw June show up with Nick. Yeah, it's kind of like, thanks, bro. Sana, how about you? What stood out?
Mine's a little minor detail as well. It's Serena's very delicate, very dainty chevron necklace. A chevron is like the insignia you have on like military uniforms and police uniforms. And it was just like a little nod to she's back in the fight. She's back fighting for Gilead. She's Gilead Army.
Nice. Mm. Nice touch. I couldn't see it past all those meters of lilac fabric.
Right. Yeah, it was a lot. But it was just so pretty and dainty, but like sinister.
Oh, I didn't notice that. That's nice. I like that detail.
Gemologist, did you notice that, Natalie Hambly?
You know what? I didn't. I feel really bad about it. But look, I am watching it on a very, very small screen, I'm afraid. So that's my excuse and I'm sticking to it.
What stood out for you?
My moment is also small and like a little bit awkward as well, but it's Serena and Lawrence, and she got him to get down on his knees. Like, I love that. I think that kind of sums up perhaps a really big problem with both Lawrence and Gilead. Like, Lawrence, who thinks he is God, and there's
but doesn't believe in God.
Yes. And there's Gilead commanders that just don't get on their knees enough.
Yeah, quite right. And for me, it's another Lawrence, but it's more his comment about Disneyland and the safety of it and making New Bethlehem be as safe as Disneyland to the diplomats. I just liked that then we're in an abandoned amusement park shot up for the rest of the episode. It was like, yeah, I don't like what that bodes for New Bethlehem, but yeah, not a small moment. But anyway, just launching a plot point in there. But that one stood out for me.
Love that.
Let's get into it. Episode 3. So we pick up, obviously, at the end of episode 2, June has just shown up to No Man's Land to try and find Luke and Moira as they're trying to do their part for May Day. She's shaken out of a memory by Tuello to head off. So Luke and Moira went there to get details of the extremist commanders who shot down the plane in the attempt to get Hannah last season. And here's where June takes him to task for working with Mayday now. It's kind of like he's making Mayday more than it ever was. It's getting military backing now. It's kind of getting a bit bigger, and she's not sure about that. You know, I mean, she's got some strong opinions about that, really. It's not really what Mayday was. or is.
Yeah, she's kind of critical that the military are just using the civilians in May Day to do their dirty work and basically die on their behalf.
Yeah, yeah. The collateral damage, yeah.
Yeah.
Which Twello did say, basically, last episode, as many bodies as it takes, right?
That's right, yes.
For me, it's like Twello was really shaping up to be an inscrutable character. He always, I think in previous seasons, has been, I don't know, a little bit like pure as a driven snow kind of a guy. And now he's sort of, now like everyone in this show sort of mirrors each other, and it's not just June and Serena. There's also like Nick and Luke, and there's Moira and Janine. And for me, there's now Twello and the commander whose name I have forgotten because
Wharton?
I keep thinking he's Will.
Wharton. Wharton, yes. High Commander Wharton.
Yes, because they're both like, they both have the ability to be like, one is a nice guy who now looks like he's a little bit bad, and one is a bad guy who's really good at looking like a nice guy. Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is interesting.
Clever. That's, yeah, I like that.
I like that. Yes. And this is also where June finds out from Twello that Serena made it okay. She's at some function in New Bethlehem today. Mm. And it's interesting. Her first question is, oh, is she okay? And is Noah okay? So,
because she did push him out of a train.
Yes.
Is there blood on my hands?
But she is fundamentally a good person, so she cares.
That's right.
Although I was kind of like, why do you care about Serena? Who cares if she's okay? She's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm fundamentally not a good person, clearly.
And, you know, she's in New Bethlehem. So also June finds out that that came to pass for Lawrence. But, yeah, she always comes out on top. It was June's observation. And Nick has gone dark. Twello can't reach him. So, of course, he needs June's help. Everyone needs June's help. And what makes you think Nick will show up? For you. And she has a little cheeky smile.
She did have a cheeky little smile. Yeah. She knew it.
Back to New Bethlehem. This is where Lawrence and Nick are having their conversation about the dignitaries showing up today and the need to put on a good front. They need to convince these international diplomats to send refugees to New Bethlehem.
And Lawrence basically described, or he does describe Nick as basically the mayor of New Bethlehem.
Yeah.
Which did we catch that before? Has that been said before?
Well, he's the Gilead guy in New Bethlehem. Like, he's,
okay,
yeah,
right.
I don't think officially the mayor. But yes, whatever that means in Gilead speak. But yeah, he's the main guy.
Lawrence introduces Nick to the German diplomat as the supervisor of New Bethlehem as well. So maybe that's okay. His formal title.
That feels like a demotion
supervisor.
From mayor. Looks like he's like doing council pickup and bin clearance.
The alderman of New Bethlehem. The essence of the event today is to show the diplomats that it's not a trap, that it's not a way to just get all the people who fled Gilead back and get them all back as handmaids and double down on them for human rights abuses. And it just reminded me way back in one of the seasons when Fred and Winslow were sort of cooking up a plan to get the refugees back as well. It sounded a bit more formal and nasty. This feels like a...
Right.
This with a friendlier face.
Soft power pull.
Quite right. Yes. So we've got to show these diplomats we're as safe as Disneyland. Yes, the German, he's the assistant deputy, has roots to May Day. He passes on the message about June being at mile marker 17. What's going on?
May Day has its fingers everywhere. It's, you know, it's...
Well, Twello does anyway.
Yeah.
I think, like, Gilead has managed to piss off the entire world, that there is enough resistance globally.
Yes.
I don't know. What does that remind anyone of? It's a mystery. We'll never know.
Put it out there to the world. And so then June is waiting at mile marker 17, no lies told, and it was their first scene together this season, June and Nick, because the last time they saw each other, well, he saw her at her bedside, unbeknownst to her, after the assassination attempt, and she last saw him just before the final episode of season 5 when he basically confirmed he was going to stay in Gilead and he was married. That's when he said the baby was on the way. So that was their last moment. But they're catching each other up on things. One observation of this season so far, there's a lot of people catching other people up on things that we've seen. It's unusual. But he is finding out about Luke and Moira and why they're in no man's land. And June is saying it's because I wasn't there to stop them doing that.
I did like the moment where she tells him that Holly is in Alaska with Nicole. That was beautiful to see her be able to share that with him.
Yes. Again, telling another telling someone what we've already said.
Exposition. I will take that one. That was a beautiful emotional moment.
True.
Allow it. Yes.
True. I'll take all the mentions of Holly. That's fair enough. But Nick is wedged because they need his help to stop the patrols that are keeping Luke and Moira stuck in no man's land. But he, Mr. Mayor, has to be at this function. But June's asking him to go and put himself in jeopardy again. So, of course, he throws caution to the wind and says he will, just with some gentle pressure from June. And he's...
Yeah, because, well, I mean, he's reluctant to at first because he has somewhere to be and he's feeling very compromised. But I think it's when June says, well, look, if you can't help me, I'm just going to have to go in there alone. And so I think it's really the fact that she's going to have to put her life at risk if he's not there. So that's when he decides he's going to step up and go in despite the risks.
Mm.
It's him protecting her in a way.
Yeah, again. She's very presumptuous to think she's going to, though. Like, she's just going to go in the car like he's Gilead Uber driver.
I love that, though. That just sort of speaks to their connection as a couple or just as two people who are really familiar with each other. Of course, you're just going to get in their car.
True, but it's Gilead and she's June Osborne. It makes more sense if he's Commander Blaine going to get these two from No Man's Land. It can look more convincing.
I do worry she's getting a bit cavalier with Nick's safety.
Yes.
You know? I feel like he's getting thrown under the bus and he's wedged in a very hard place in a rock. I'm worried about him. And I don't think she's thinking enough about the cost to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And putting him in that, as he said, though, he did like defend himself, which I appreciated when he said that he's basically being sent to rescue her other boyfriend
husband.
Or other husband.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, actually, stop asking him to do this.
Yes.
But we have this tension where we've had Holly's mom, you know, call him a Nazi. We, you know, he's
I'm sorry, I still love that line.
You know, he's getting promoted. He's now the supervisor. No, he's getting promoted within Gilead. Like, he's gaining power. There's this risk that he will get pushed to a point where he's not going to defend June. Like, I feel like there is this tension there about, is he going to get pushed to breaking point this season? Yeah. Or he's just going to be like, fuck it, I give my life to this because I screwed up so hard. I love June. There's no other options for me. I do what I got to do and that's the price I pay. Back to my theory of Nick being the one that dies this season.
Well, it's funny, right? Because, like, from this episode, I was sort of left with a feeling of, I think Nick is my favourite character. And I say that in a way, not just because I've enjoyed him all the seasons as a bit of light relief, but, like, at some point Lydia mentions the O'Connor people and that got my mind thinking about them again. And I remember I've said in the past, like, if we were in Gilead, probably we would all be O'Connor people. You know, like, we're not like the Commanders and we're not the Serenas and we're not the Junes and we're not there making waves. But it's like, I'm kind of
in your
like,
past, I might end up I'm just a
handmaid. I'd be a Martha probably. I'm going to work on my cooking.
I actually need the recipe, so I could never be a Martha. But it was more that I look at Nick and I just think, you know, like some kind of the Serenas and the Lawrences and the Lydias. And I think maybe like this season we're going to hopefully maybe see them gain a conscience and try and make a difference for the better. And part of me is just like so over it in that sense. Like they had their humanity tested and they really failed. And Nick for me is like this character that I more understand, which is he was never a true believer. Like Serena, he's never played God like Lawrence. He's just trying to survive in this really shitty world that he's got himself caught up in. He just tries to keep his head down and he's not trying to save the world. He's just trying to look after the people he loves. And I'm like, that is actually hugely relatable to me and I kind of respect it.
Mm.
So in that sense, yeah, he is going to go in and save June whenever she calls.
Because he loves her.
Because, yeah, that's... Is the one
the
person
good
he can
thing
save?
To do. What do we remember about why he joined Gilead? Was it just his circumstances, his shitty sort of background?
He was recruited outside a job office by Commander Price back in early seasons. And Price ended up being killed in that bomb blast at the opening of the Rachel and Leah Center. So he was a bit of a reform. He was sort of cracking down on the commanders playing up. Nick was in the Waterford house to keep an eye on Fred at Price's direction. So Price recruited Nick because he saw the good in him because Nick came from bad circumstances. He had an abusive father and he was seeking work to care for his family, particularly his brother and his mum. So Right. He's not a true believer.
Mm. Right. So he was a bit of a lost soul that was brought into Gilead, and that gave him some direction. But I feel like now maybe his character's, you know, his guiding light is June, and that's harks back to the title of the episode, which is devotion. So that maybe this episode is all about showing the devotion of Nick to June.
Hmm. And there's devotion across all of it because, you know, Serena's challenging Lawrence about his faith, and that's actually the next scene. So she's having doubts about having come back, and she's doubting Lawrence's reasons for having her come back. So she's sort of challenging him to say a Bible verse because she saw his efforts at the dinner table in the previous episodes. And she needs to know that God chose him. Sorry, Serena. I still, obviously, because I just rewatched all of it, but yeah, this is the woman who showed up on his doorstep that one dark and stormy night with Fred and Winslow and had him perform the ceremony with June, and that's what precipitated his wife's suicide. So I do like that he brought up Eleanor in this scene as well as kind of a factor just to remind Serena of their shared history, particularly. So for her to be demanding that she see God act through Lawrence is a bit rich, and I like that he called her on it, even though he still needs her, and he did it subtly.
You know, we always enjoy Lawrence, but he is a commander who does get humbled in pretty much every season we've ever seen him in some way, shape or form. And it just so happens that it's now Serena's turn. And so I did like that she really tested him on his beliefs, because we know that he only really believes in himself.
That's right.
But he will do it. Like, he's clearly got a huge ego, but it's so different from what a typical Gilead commander has. He's so unusual that he will get on his knees. He will practically beg her. He knows that he needs her, and he's kind of not afraid to show it. So, yeah, I did really enjoy that from him. But I'm also really enjoying, you know, seeing how Serena is being portrayed this season, which really is as a true believer.
Mm.
Yes. I think in the past we've had these discussions and we didn't really know where she landed. We didn't really know what her deal was. Was she just in it because she wanted to be a celebrity and she got to write that book and be famous? Mm. You know, does she just want to be on a stage? Or where was all this actually coming from? And now it's like, I kind of like how she's being pitched this season as a reminder of like, oh no, like she actually believes this.
She's a total zealot.
That's interesting, yeah.
I question that, though, because I think she is there for the power and she is there for all of that you've just said.
Mm.
Yeah, and she's not being true to herself. I think she's putting religion up there on a pedestal as the reason that she's back, but she's not being completely honest with herself. Whereas Lawrence in this conversation is, like he says, maybe I'm here because of my dead wife. Maybe I'm here because I feel guilty about everything I've done and I need to put it right. Like, he's being very honest, and I think she's not being honest to herself.
But religion has always been a vehicle of power. So I don't see that as like unhappy bedfellows, that she wants power and she's very religious. I think they marry quite well together. She's a preacher's daughter. She probably wanted to be a preacher but couldn't in the world she was in, right?
Mm. It is interesting, yeah, what you're saying there, because it stands out how much she's quoting the Bible this season. Like, and it feels phony. I don't know. It's just so, it's so performative the way she's been doing it. So it is at odds with how we've seen her in previous seasons, but she's aware of the optics of her quoting the Bible as much as she wants to quote
her
the passage.
Her faith isn't pure and giving. Her faith is like, it's vindictive, right? Like, so that's the flavor of religion and expression of faith that she moves through the world with. It's about punishment. It's about right and wrong. It's about good and bad. Like, she's not a forgiving kind of character at all. So I see the way she expresses it and the performative nature of her, like, reading the Bible and stuff. She's kind of like your hypocritical religious person in a way. It just fits the bill for me.
Mm. And it's funny because I think I've seen it differently from you, Fiona, because it didn't seem performative to me in the sense that I feel like she does actually believe it.
Mm.
And it's funny, like, in a partnership or in a marriage or you know, whatever, one person will take a role, and once that role is taken, then you have to take a different role. Siblings do it as well. And so, like, in her previous marriage, Fred took that role. He was the one spouting all the Bible verses. He was the one who was, like, the voice of the religion, but he ain't there anymore. And so she's kind of stepping up into this kind of typical male role where, like, just like you said, kind of like what her father had, where she's now the one saying it. But I kind of think she believes it.
I think she... It's not that it's totally phony. Like, she's not the Lawrence of... But, like, it does come from having faith, but it's just, it's so overblown. I think it rings false because of that. And, I mean, I guess I looked at the quote as well that he quotes her at saying grace the other night, and he just copies that. He says he memorised the line.
Nice. Good.
And, yeah, I was struck by those words, which are, we know things work out for them that love God and are called to his purpose. And that just... brought to mind the comment that June made earlier, that like it always works out for Serena. And I just feel like Serena's on the up and up here. I just don't think that's sustainable. And maybe it's because she's not fully loving God in the way that she thinks.
Well, I don't want to jump ahead, but what about the part where she has to give her speech in front of...
Yeah, I mean, that's all connected, say, for sure.
In front of the New Bethlehem visitors. And she does say, she does sort of humble herself by admitting that she has made mistakes.
That is the first time we've ever really, she's been challenged in the last couple of episodes to take ownership for things she's done.
That I wonder if that's like real accountability or performative kind of like, I've made mistakes.
I did terrible things because I felt powerless. And so I exerted power over those around me.
Bingo.
Yes, she's actually admitted. Yeah, she exerted power over the... Like, that is what we have hated about her for all of these seasons. And is she actually recognising that?
Mm.
Like, really? Really?
It was that knee-jerk reaction. She, you know, when she was abused by Fred, she'd abuse June immediately, and Rita. Anyone who was in her path, really, but those two copped it the most.
Mm. So did those women on the train actually make a difference? Did she actually realise that she has hurt all of these people and...
Them, and then in the Garden of Eden, whatever that was, that she was, her little retreat last episode, the woman was challenging her to take more ownership of the actions she had taken. So, yeah, I guess it's cumulatively building up.
I wonder if she, like, has realised she needs to say these words to get people on side based on what people have been saying to her in previous episodes. And so she's parroting, like, I don't think she's got real remorse about her role at all.
I guess that's like yet to be seen, because the first thing Wharton says to her after that speech is, oh my gosh, you are a great salesperson,
right?
Suggesting that it's all for show.
Totally.
That's his read of it. But is she really there to atone for her sins, to try and make things better for the women around her in Gilead? I think we're yet to see.
She's been called to heal the world, guys. Like, she's fine.
Has everyone else got the problems?
She's kind of like, sorry, this is a really random thought, but she's reminded me of the Cate Blanchett character in Lord of the Rings, where she finally gets the ring and she has to be, and she's really, really tempted, and you see all this evil flash over her face for a minute as she's almost tempted to take the ring from Frodo. And it's almost like Serena's in this moment, like she's now back in her power and the power is right there and she could really take it, but is she going to make the right decision?
Who's Frodo in this analogy?
Yeah, good question.
Look at this crossover we're pitching. So to jump back into the episode, from that scene with Serena and Lawrence, hello, Lydia Clements. Finally, we get some Lydia. It's episode 3 in season 6. And she... is that a bit of a loss? It looks at first like she's in that torture chamber place that we've seen in previous episodes, but it's a Jezebel's. And this is the first time of two across this episode where things that we're aware of and places we've been, you know, it dawns on you that other people aren't aware of some of these other people and other places that we're familiar with. So Lydia wasn't aware of a Jezebel's. She'd never been there. And she's shook, and rightly so. And then later on, we realize Moira's never met Nick. So it's
I'd completely forgotten they had never met.
Yeah. So anyway, welcome to Lydia's nightmare in the Jezebels. And of course, she sees Janine, who we had assumed was in Jezebels from that very short clip in the trailer that we'd seen. But she's seeing four of her girls, previous handmaids who had borne fruit for the regime, cast aside.
I'm kind of like, Lydia, you're so naive.
Yeah, right.
I just shrug my shoulders and I'm like,
Oh, silly Lydia.
Speaking of true believers.
Yeah. I know. She's not well, though, is she? She's got a bit of a tremor.
Two people allude to her health in this. Yeah. Yeah. Janine asks if she's okay, and then Lawrence asks it a bit later. So something with Lydia.
Because we do see her later in the episode when she has that confrontation with Lawrence, and she's standing at the foot of a flight of stairs.
Oh. Yes.
And I was like, oh, that's right. She did have that pretty nasty fall.
Was that Janine who pushed her?
Fall.
Another fall.
She had a spell.
Who had pushed her that time?
Emily.
Oh, Emily.
Yeah.
Emily,
yes. Yeah, she hacked at her with a knife and then pushed her right down the stairs. So, yeah.
So maybe there are some long-lasting effects from that.
That is right. Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And for the second time in this episode, someone is stopped from praying, and the faith is brought into question here, because Lydia's starting to pray for the girls in Jezebel's, and Janine stops her as well, just sort of drawing attention to the phony ceremonial faith of Gilead, and prayers aren't going to help you here. Janine does say to Lydia, if you really want to help me, forget about me.
That, I think, was maybe the most tragic line.
Mm.
That I heard this episode. That was pretty gutting.
Yeah. And Lawrence kind of echoes it later when he says, you know, she was gone the moment you got your hands on her. So, yeah.
Which is another, because that makes you think of Janine losing her eye. Yeah. Losing her eye. Sorry.
I'm being very passive today.
Yes.
When her eye fell out.
Yeah. She just accidentally just lost that eye. But it's a reminder of just like how Serena had just said that she had used her power in terrible ways.
Yes.
And that's a reminder that Lydia also used her power in terrible ways.
Mm.
And so, look, I do find this part of the storyline fascinating for the show. Like, this is kind of what I'm really enjoying this season, is the Serenas and the Lydias. Can they actually face the reality? As the true believers, they're both having the wool pulled from their eyes in different ways. But that is a really hard thing to do if you have to admit that what you've done is wrong and everything around you is also wrong.
Mm.
That, how do you actually respond to that? And it's really, really difficult. I find that whole thing fascinating. So I'm going to enjoy seeing the hopefully enlightening of Lydia.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully the enlightening of Serena.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
We'll see.
I was a little bit struck by the pace with the way this season has come back. It's a little bit of a slower start than I had expected. But that said, I am liking, like you're saying, this kind of like it's spending time with characters just sort of interrogating where they're at this point in Gilead.
Yeah, right, because no one's died. Someone's normally died by now.
We haven't seen a handmaid yet.
Right, like last season, remember when June helped that young character, the young Esther. Wife, Esther, stabbed someone to mm-hmm. death.
They salvaged a rapist.
Yeah, like there's normally something incredibly terrifying that happens in the first two episodes.
Three.
Yeah, now we're on the third and nothing truly terrifying has happened yet.
Mm.
Oh no, episode four.
Yes, it makes me nervous about what's to come.
But yes, New Bethlehem, we're back there. It's got a logo, it's got a flag. Lawrence is saying how they've successfully reformed a conservative theocracy and they've liberalised it without spilling a drop of blood. I think he's a little premature.
A drop of blood.
I know.
Wow. He's like, forgetting a lot.
yeah, glossing over all the bad bits. And here they're walking on their way to the big pitch to the dignitaries of the world, and Serena and Wharton meet. And she seems a little unsure at first about him, maybe a little bit defensive or taken aback by his flattery. So he's the one who basically got her back. He pitched that to Lawrence and Nick a couple of episodes ago. But yeah, there's something in the way she first greets him that has her a little bit on the back foot. Maybe just a slight moment that I picked up. But anyway, that's a very brief scene. And then we're at the abandoned water park. Nick and June riffing on old times a little bit. He has a prior engagement that he has to get to, but doesn't seem to have a care for that right now. They're looking for the gift shop in this strange place. It's been closed a long time. And I was thinking back, Luke being stuck here, his only experience of Gilead and No Man's Land so far is like a bowling alley from season five, and now it's an abandoned water park. It's like, what picture has he formed about
abandoned leisure zones?
That's right.
Yeah, a lot of leisure zones in No Man's Land. It's a strange place for them, really.
That's right.
I do want to know where on the map exactly this No Man's Land is.
Yeah, 100%.
I enjoyed the drone shot, the overhead drone shot of the rusted slides.
Yeah, yeah.
That was quite beautiful.
That was a great shot. The colours in it too. Mm. Yeah, great location scouting, whoever found that abandoned park.
Shout out to the location scout.
And here's where June and Nick are catching up a little bit on things that have happened. So here's where she's asking what made him change her mind about being a double agent. And that was kind of a strange conversation to me, because it was like she says to Nick, she doesn't know how he does it, playing Gilead off against Tuello and Little America, or what was it? And like, how do you do it? And I just thought, he's been helping her out for years. Like, what do you mean, how does he do it?
Yeah, like he got the letters to Luke way back in season two or whatever that
was. That's right.
Yeah, he's an eye.
That's right, yeah.
That's his job.
He has his ways, June. So that was an odd one.
I mean, he's been in love with you and like dalliancing with you all around Gilead.
Oh, no. We're just sort of baiting for that.
Manage these two kind of tracks of life.
It's like baiting for you, babe.
Yeah, so like, is that why you came to spy for the Americans, to see me? Yeah, no shit, of course it was. So I guess, you know, she's learning the depths of his emotions, like, because I guess the last time they saw each other was when he said he's married with a baby on the way, and it's, you know, so sure. And Lawrence is presenting to the diplomats of the world that he calls it the Dubai of the West.
Still pretty scary. Like, women have tried to escape the rulers of Dubai, and it hasn't worked out for them, you know.
That's right.
It's not sounding very safe.
But he is very clear there will be no human rights violations here. Maybe in the rest of Gilead, but not New Bethlehem.
Yeah, yeah, we're not like those guys.
Like,
maybe they've got like a different book of human rights violations. Theirs is like a lot smaller.
The pamphlet, that pamphlet that Serena was leafing through. And here's where Serena does acknowledge she did terrible things, and she'll spend the rest of her days trying to atone for that, and she'll ask for forgiveness every day from those that she hurt. There is an interesting cutaway to Wharton as she's talking here, and he's kind of watching everyone watching her, but it kind of lingers on him. And we still don't know anything about this guy. What is his backstory? We have no idea. And she's just on the words that it cuts away to him on are kind of interesting to me. And she's saying that she's not even certain that God will still forgive her.
Mm, that's a good point, because I did think we're seeing I did sort of clock. It was lingering on him while she was talking. Mm. We were seeing his sort of subtle reactions to her words.
Yeah, and he's made a play to get her back here. So is it just a crush? I don't know. Why was she a little bit defensive when she first saw him? Don't know.
Maybe she picked up on his like keen vibes and she was like, excuse me. I'm not ready.
Maybe like the whole point of Luke and Moira's mission was to find out information on those really conservative commanders to take them out.
Yeah.
And so is that what Serena is going to do if she does end up marrying? Because we think she might be marrying this guy, right? Like that was kind of what the trailer said.
That's the connection we've drawn.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll be doing her own version of taking out the conservative commanders.
Well, on that, do we have any sense of like how were Luke and Moira actually going to collect this information on conservative commanders?
Well, they were picking up a parcel, which is the photos that Luke has.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
and he's looking over the names and and like to be clear, like it's from that one shot in the trailer of Serena looking like she's in a wedding dress, and we've kind of jumped to
we've
our own conclusions.
Yeah,
like,
we're
this new handsome guy, it must be them. So it's like, who knows?
He has been flattering her at every moment. You know, he has the chance to, so
correct.
He's definitely got his eyes on
And there's
on
no
her.
Wife around for him. That's like, we haven't met a wife.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Guess who's single?
We're just Gilead matchmakers now.
It is odd that a high commander would be single, though. So we don't really know his story yet.
Yeah.
It's almost like a test of New Bethlehem, because women basically can't be single.
Nope.
And so Serena was always going to end up being forced to marry somebody because she couldn't just be a widow.
Not New Bethlehem, apparently.
So, yeah, can she be a widow in New Bethlehem, or is she also going to get pressured to marry someone?
Mm. And, of course, she dangles the babies in front of
She's like a mumfluencer.
Yes! 100%.
Dangling her kid at every chance.
Yeah.
That's right. On cue, here's little Noah. Here's one I prepared earlier. And here's one on the way. Rose, step forward.
And don't the diplomats just swoon as soon as they see children or the promise of children, which is, I think, just a reminder of of how stark the fertility problems around the world are that Gilead seems to be successfully overcoming, like just seeing how these diplomats who are really there to interrogate the safety of Gilead, as soon as a baby is dangled in front of them, they're just like, oh my goodness, can I have a cuddle?
That's right, can I touch your tummy? Well, we'll start organising voluntary repatriation pending international monitoring by the UN.
You've convinced me.
That's right, yeah. Sure. It's going to be fine. Let me touch your kid. Yes, because Serena does also mention there's a fact there about the birth rate in Gilead having doubled in the past year, and they're outstripping the birth rates in every developed country. So,
you know what's funny about this?
Yeah.
And I say funny.
Lots.
It's probably not funny. But we always talk about how this show keeps mirroring true life events, and it's kind of uncanny, and you know, and it kind of freaks us out a bit. But I think this is an example of where the show got it really wrong.
Oh,
which is, I think that like, did they think they had to come up with a really plausible reason why Gilead managed to come to be in the first place and managed to grab power? Because it's a really great reason. Like the environment is so bad, humans have like ruin the environment so much that like that women can't get pregnant anymore. And now the birth rate is plummeting. And you look at that and go, okay, I can kind of see why people would have been swayed by this new organic lifestyle with the promise of lovely produce and also, of course, the promise of beautiful babies.
Which so mirrors life right now. Like there's a resurgence, not just of tradwife content, but even like Instagrams like Ballerina Farm. It's all this pastoral beauty and motherhood and produce and animals. Like it's a whole vibe that is exactly mirrored of what's going on Instagram right now.
So you can see why people, like that makes sense. You can see why people would fall for that. But we also, like in real life, people haven't needed that. Like all it took was like one party to sort of elect someone who has no morals and everyone fell for it and there was no great plan and there was no, like there was sort of like, I look at it and go, oh, The Handmaid's Tale came up with this really good reason why everyone fell for Gilead, and actually in real life, we're all so dumb. Like no, we don't even need that.
That's right. Yeah, and also in watching the early eps and just watching the plot and taking over the capital, it was so formulated in that way and like not in a democratic election. And now just watching the irony of that, like they didn't actually have to go to those lengths because people
win landslides and
social media is eroding democracy left, right and centre without any kind of takeover.
But on the fertility point, it's so interesting. It is mirroring right now because in recent days, the occupant of the White House has mentioned he's named himself the fertility president. Elon Musk famously has fathered many children and
from many women
has been talking about civilization is going to disappear unless the birth rates rise. The quote is, the birth rate is very low in almost every country, and unless that changes, civilization will disappear. So that's only a couple of days ago at the time of recording this podcast. So it's very timely. Mm. Once again, could it stop being so timely? Please and thank you.
It's a bit chicken and egg. What like came first? Mm. Was it the global environmental and fertility crisis, which then gave birth to Gilead? Or was it the Gilead mindset and then they just clutched at straws to the environmental impact to go, oh, we can use this?
Was it the Lawrence or was it the Fred and Serena? Yeah. And it's kind of like they did both find each other, and Lawrence is not a man of faith. And he's admitted across the seasons and just to Serena even, you know, he saw the opportunity and seized it because he was concerned about the climate crisis. But Fred and Serena were coming from a morals campaign and a morals crusade, really. So they struck this perfect storm, if you will. And that's how it happened. In The Handmaid's Tale, anyway.
Mm. And look, Noah is really cute, you know?
I freaking loved dressing my baby up in teddy bear ear outfits.
Yes!
My favorite thing. I was like, this makes labor fucking worth it. Actually, no, it doesn't. But it was just like the best part of having a baby, the animal ears. Loved it.
They grow out of them and it's so sad.
I know. Now he's four, my kid, and I'm like, I don't know if I can stick animal ears on you anymore. Anyways.
Do you know what I thought when I saw the teddy bear outfit that Noah was in? I was like, oh, kids can wear synthetics in New Bethlehem.
Nice.
Hey.
Because everywhere else the kids have been in, you know, cotton, old, ye olde, but here is a, you know, puffy synthetic jacket in the, on Noah. Yeah.
It really has changed.
Yeah.
Back to the water park. Why are there so many patrols of this abandoned water park? Yeah, it's a hotbed of insurrection. This is where Nick and June have their moment about the eternal goodbyes, about use of past tense. Ouch, I loved you. So, yeah, they're having a heart-to-heart as they're seeking Luke and Moira.
Yeah, I'm really glad Nick got to explain his emotional experience, saying to her, I have to continually say goodbye to you. I have to let you go over and over. I don't think she quite understood what that would feel like. And I've said she, you know, she's getting cavalier with his safety. She's also been a little bit cavalier, I guess, with his emotions, right?
Yeah.
So I'm glad he got to have his say and express what it's like for him.
That's true, because all we have seen of Nick is what he's done for her. We haven't really seen the Nick side of things. Oh, you know, and his own wife is aware of what he's done for June.
Yeah.
We've really seen Nick through the prism of his love for June.
Apart from his like constant air of sadness. You know, it feels like he's got like a Sufjan Stevens or Bon Iver track playing behind him at all times.
Last week you said he's a sad boy.
Yeah, the sad boy music, exactly. Yeah.
Moody teenager.
Yeah. Poor Jess / Nick.
Yeah. And he does say, do you know what it's like to be in love with you? And she says it must be hellish. Part of me also in that scene was like, Nick, seriously, like, do you know what it's like to be a handmaid?
This is true. This is true. Do you know what it's like to, yeah, have your child ripped away and not see her for years? This is true. Like, I'm being a bit harsh on June, like being cavalier with the safety and emotions. She's got a lot on her.
I really liked this scene as well, and it was super romantic, and I'm a sucker for that, and it felt a bit Bridgerton in a way. And
Natalie with the pop culture references, I love it.
And I'm a huge sucker for that too. But if we're finally finding out exactly how Nick feels and how deep his love goes, of course, that just makes me now afraid of, like, why now that we're back on board with this and we're really feeling for him, once you start feeling for a character, we know how this ends.
Save it to the end.
Okay, because I have things to say.
Yes, because now we're in the shut up gift shop with all the sunglasses and the t-shirts. And Luke has his gun and he's looking over the photos of these dirty commanders. We hear some names. We hear Belle. That's the second time we've heard that name. Janine used it in Jezebel's as well. He was the one asking for her. So Commander Belle, haven't heard him before. Oh. Calhoun, old mate, we're aware of his work. And Dupar, I think, was the third one that he said. I don't know who Dupar is. So he says he can't wait for our guys to blow their fucking heads off. So he's there for the fight, but he's stuck in a gift shop. And he and Moira have a moment where he's saying, I should never let you come with me. And sorry, Luke, don't say that to Moira. Yeah, you can't let me do anything, Luke. But here's where it comes out. Like, Luke is feeling that he's screwed up again, and June's going to see that he's screwed up again. So he's...
And poor Luke does have to get bailed out by June and Nick. Like, I understand his feelings here of being a bit ineffectual, even though, you know, not necessarily the circumstances have dictated a lot of what he can and can't do.
He's always stuck by circumstance. He tries to enact action and help, but he's always held back by something outside of his control.
But, yeah, true, and, like, this whole conversation is about June's low expectations of him and, like, he's failed her again. But Moira is spending part of the time of being held up in a gift shop waiting for the pickup from Mayday in, you know, No Man's Land, Gilead, where she was a handmaid and a Jezebel and, like, Moira's got the history here, but she's spending this time building up Luke's self-value. I was just like, part of me is just about Luke. If you're signing up to Mayday sight unseen, no questions asked, but you need a Moira pep talk to keep you going, you should not be signing up to Mayday.
Yes, which I felt as soon as I saw him hold a gun. And it felt so wrong. It was like, no. Get that out of his hands.
Gosh, he's the other mopey sad boy, right.
And it's like, what is actually more embarrassing? Is it doing a mission, doing a basic mission and failing, or needing June to come rescue you? And I was like, oh mate, this is not good. And not only does he get rescued by June, but rescued by June and Nick.
June and a boyfriend.
Then shows what the hell you do with a gun, you know?
That's so right.
Oh, yeah. That's also going to play on Luke's mind, because he came here to shoot some shit up, do something, and here's Nick literally shooting shit up and defending his girl and his girl's friends.
I feel like maybe he can leave now and going, oh, I get it now. And I feel like Moira had the exact same feeling. She's like, oh, it's really good to meet you. And in like inside, she's going, I get it now.
Dangerous, sexy.
They hold up hiding from these guardians, and Nick goes out and shoots both of them, takes care of them easily. Yeah, I feel like the Luke moments that we've seen this season are for everyone who kind of wanted Luke to save the day. It's like if you've kind of through the seasons been thinking, oh, when's Luke going to get his moment? And I feel like we're kind of seeing, I don't know that Luke's going to get a moment, and that's okay.
That's okay. That's just not his role as much as he perhaps wants it to be.
He desperately misses his daughter.
Yeah.
But doesn't mean that he's going to be effective trying to get her back.
I actually really love this. Thank you for this. Like, this has made me really actually love the Luke storyline, because normally, like, men have been so lucky for so long that when they get portrayed in movies and TV and just all of pop culture, they're always either super smart like Lawrence, or they have political power, or they're the massive superhero saving the world. And so whenever a guy gets to watch these shows, they kind of get to live in those shoes and imagine that that's them. And so they can watch The Handmaid's Tale, and they could maybe see themselves as a Nick, or they might even see themselves as a Lawrence. But I'm like, mate, I think you're actually a Luke. And I really like that they've given us this example. And it's like, not everyone saves the day. Not every man saves the day.
That's right. And sorry, but...
But he was also, what he did do, he was solid at home. You know, he took care of Nicole for a long time. He held down that fort. Like, there's value in what Luke has been able to do, just not in the traditional sense of
masculinity. He's a super great dad and an amazing husband and father, and friend.
And has waited for June the whole time, was steadfast in his love for June, right?
And is the best man that Moira knows.
Exactly.
That's right. That is right. And so when June and Nick come through the doors of that gift shop and are whisked off to safety, Nick is off his game. He does not check his blind spots, and they walk right out in front of those guardians. Obviously, it's showing the impact that June has on him, because, you know, for a top guy, military guy, to not look over his shoulder is a failing. So as June is hiding out behind those chip pallets or whatever outside the water park, Nick takes care of those two guardians, who kind of call him out for flouting rules and breaking protocol, and they kind of need to report it back in, but no, pew, pew, and he takes care of those. There was a good shot as they're walking back to the car speedily. The camera sort of hangs on the side mirror of the vehicle as the door shuts, and just kind of watches June's face driving away, thinking, what the hell just happened and what is going to come next? But we don't know that, because we're back to New Bethlehem, and the champagne all round at Nick's place, I guess it must be, because Rose is there and Wharton's there and Serena and Joseph are there and Naomi's there.
Mm-hmm. I love how paltry the spread is at the celebration. Do you remember what Gilead buffets looked like?
Amazing.
They were heaping with food, and this was like couple of little, you know, kind of sandwiches and a bit of champagne. Like, it was so empty, that table. Even though there wasn't Martha hanging out in the background.
Was there?
Yeah, there was a woman hanging out in the background. She's in the shot.
And low ceiling. That's what I noticed. All the high ceilings in Gilead, the ceiling in this room was very low. Yep.
It just looked like the saddest little spread. Oh, my God. I didn't want any of those sandwiches at all.
Yeah, but no human rights abuses, Sana.
Yes. No human rights abuses versus heaping buffets of
food. A really good spread. But, oh, Naomi. Here is where Wharton is talking about the... Wharton's a little bit sceptical about the bold expansion plans that Joseph's already talking about for New Bethlehem. You know, what a success today has been, and Serena expects to be overrun by families looking to reunite. But Wharton just wants to keep them in check a little bit. He's not entirely sure about that the country's ready for another New Bethlehem yet, let alone a bigger one. Naomi comes in with the Bigger is always better, right? Books.
She's fun. I like her.
She is. She's good value. But this one, I like kind of the way that this whole bigger is better or is it conversation about New Bethlehem kind of mirrors the is May Day better when it's bigger and better as well kind of conversation that June's having with Tuella at the same time. It's kind of, bigger's not always better when it's kind of a small bout of, you know, insurrections. Yeah, you make yourself a much bigger target if you're getting a lot bigger.
It was a really enjoyable scene. Oh, so awkward when, like, Naomi's trying to have a say and she's really not up to the task. And we can enjoy it on that level. But it's kind of bringing in the tension that is going to be in New Bethlehem. There's always this, the clear pressure on Lawrence and Nick. Can they actually make this work? And to make it look like Disneyland, that is just so impossible. And we see that in this moment. Can a woman actually have a voice? And you're going to have all of these old school Gilead people. Mm-hmm. And can they actually change enough to allow that? Just how uncomfortable is New Bethlehem going to be for them? And we get to see it in that little scene.
Yeah, this is Naomi using her voice and like throwing out her opinions probably for the first time, right? It's partly why she's so bad at it.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, like no one in Gilead is looking for her to have an interjection or an opinion in any conversation.
And she would never dared.
That's right.
This is her trying to be part of the conversation.
Yeah, it's almost like if it were three commanders talking about their strategies and she's, I agree. I absolutely agree.
She has to work that muscle out a bit more.
That's right, yeah. It is a relatively safe space, apparently. No human rights abuses. She can be really orcs with a champagne, but still, it was kind of fun.
I do appreciate that. Lawrence covered for Nick. I think it was in the scene.
He did.
Yes. Thank you, Lawrence. Sometimes you do good things.
And Serena did too.
That's
right. Did Serena as well?
What does Serena say?
She just kind of shoots him a look. Lawrence makes up an excuse about that there's an issue along the trade route that called Nick away.
Yeah.
And yes, Serena goes along with it, and just with a reassuring kind of look, I think, more
than
anything else.
And she manages to direct him out of the room before he can question Lawrence more to go, so what was this issue? Tell me more about that. Before he can do that, she's like, oh, I've got to put Noah to bed. Maybe you can walk me outside.
All right. Thank you, Serena,
she does.
As well.
Yes.
Future son-in-law, she's got to be a little bit motherly.
But also Rose in the room, she's just looking at her dad flirt with Serena endlessly. So.
Poor Rose is very mute, right? Like, she's the only one not saying anything at all. Yes. I think she's probably deeply disappointed that Nick's not there and feeling embarrassed or whatever else.
Yeah.
And angry.
Yes. But Lawrence gets home, clearly. He and Naomi ordering ice cream. And Lydia's there to appeal on Janine's behalf, obviously, in the wake of having seen her at Jezebel's and in the wake of having seen four of her girls at Jezebel's. But here, Naomi certainly finds her voice and she calls our Janine a rude, vulgar, ungrateful little bitch, and we're done with her. Which also echoes the Serena acknowledgement earlier that when she felt powerless, she exerted power over those around her. So, you know, Naomi is an old school Gilead wife who, she can say these things about Janine, and she can send Janine off to Jezebel's or order Joseph to as well. So, yeah, that just kind of was a nice echoing of powerless women doing nasty things because that's the world of Gilead.
And Janine did confront Naomi. They did have their moment of like, I don't like you or whatever it was that Janine said. So I kind of see why Naomi is like, yeah, nah, go somewhere else.
Yeah, nah.
Yeah. And here is where the mention of the Econo women happen. Lydia's had assumed that maybe handmaids, when they were no longer having children, might have become Econo women. But no, Joseph uses the phrase, they would never accept a stained ex-handmaid. That's a bit of that wake-up call for Lydia.
Who has 100% believed that her girls are doing God's work and providing fruit and all that sort of thing, and they deserve to be rewarded. And she believed it, which, you know, she's not a sweet lady, but that was kind of sweet.
And here's where Naomi is referred to as an old school Gilead wife by her husband. She's not like Serena Waterford, who is quite evolved and shockingly progressive.
Does he say that?
Yeah,
he did. I didn't remember that. Oh, wow. Shocking.
So this is all signalling, you know, just like Serena managed to get the commander out of the house, and now we have Lawrence signalling to Lydia, who you might have an ally with, And everyone can't actually, in Gilead, you can't say what you mean. So you have to get the word out other ways. And you just hope that the other person is picking up what you're putting down. Is Lydia picking that up? Because that's where she should go knocking next.
That's right. But now we're into the final scene of this episode. And Nick, Gilead Uber driver, is dropping back June, Luke and Moira back to No Man's Land to Willow.
I am so sad. I feel like this might be a final goodbye because we're kind of being set up to feel that way. Like they say, let's not say goodbye. Let's say see you later. So that's like, okay, now that's a goodbye because everything's opposite.
Yep.
And it's the long lingering shot on Nick and June looking over her shoulder at Nick. Like, is that a goodbye? But then if the opposite of what we expect is always what's going to happen, then I'm wondering, have they set it up to be like a final goodbye and then it's actually not? You know, like I'm going, like I'm reversing over myself with the opposites here.
Yeah, so wait, so where are you landing on this?
I don't know.
So you're saying we're being made to feel like Nick's days are numbered because it's not the goodbye they normally give when they will obviously see each other again.
For the first time they're not saying goodbye, they're saying see you later.
Yep. She has a lingering shot at Nick as she's walking away.
They don't
away.
Even embrace. They don't kiss or anything.
Normally they have the big sweepy kiss or a hug or something. It's different. This one is different.
Yeah. It does feel different.
He has declared his love and his sadness to her. So, yeah, you're saying all signs point to sad boy
meeting his demise because he's also just killed two eyes or whatever they were. So he's in a very tricky spot. But I'm wondering if all of that is such an obvious setup for us to feel this way that actually maybe that's not what's going to happen. Yeah, but I don't know where I've landed.
Can I add a layer to this?
Yeah.
That first shot of this episode, I love looking at the first shot and the last shot, and the music that's playing is Somewhere My Love, which is also more famously known as Lara's theme from Dr. Zhivago.
Oh.
A story of a huge romantic saga. Obviously, the book, the film was three and a bit hours, a romantic saga of a doomed love story. Dr. Zhivago and Lara, through the years, they see each other and they miss each other and they see each other and they miss each other.
And then what happens at the end?
Spoil me. Come on, do it.
I'll see you in 3 hours when you've watched Dr. Zhivago.
Now I've got homework. Oh, my God.
No, sad boy Dr. Zhivago. But who knows? But also, I just feel like they're setting us up so much for that.
Yeah.
I don't see it happening. I remind you, my big prediction of this season is that maybe June is the one who does not make it all to the final end. The same could apply if it's the non-goodbye and it's June that Nick doesn't see again. I don't know.
They're going to kill June. I just don't see it. But anyways, maybe.
But if I'm expecting something horrific to happen next episode, episode 4. Oh no. Like now, Sana, you made me think that is there a chance that like Nick could just be murdered for what he just did to those,
or hauled into detention and
He's
already had that though. He's already been hauled into detention.
And he does potentially have High Commander Wharton on his side only because how does he view Nick? His daughter is pregnant with Nick's baby. So does he want Nick? I'm assuming he wants Nick to hang around.
Yeah, because his daughter can't be a widowed mum.
Yes. So maybe in episode 4, maybe what we'll see is a little bit of how New Bethlehem is going to run in practice.
Yeah. This episode had me thinking, where do handmaids fit into New Bethlehem?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are there handmaids? Yes. Because there's not going to be any human rights violations, according to Lawrence. But
yeah,
that goes
how does
against
that work?
The structure of handmaids within Gilead. So, yeah, I'm very interested to see the inner workings of New Bethlehem, how it's actually going to function.
That's right. So that's quite a mellow ending of episode 3. Yeah. But I did hint that we would have a David Lester
What was that anecdote about?
The director of this episode. So I was fortunate enough to go onto the set just before Christmas, and it was the day before they broke off the filming of this season.
So jealous.
And I have got some interviews that we're going to be rolling out through the season of this podcast. And one of the people we spoke to is one of the new showrunners, Eric Tuckman, who gave a great story about David Lester, who has directed this episode. And I will just let him speak to this.
David Lester was here on day one and started as a third AD on the show. He worked as an associate producer in the office. He's a director outside of the show. And he's a wonderful, gifted director who has devoted so much to the show. First season, he basically took care of me. That was one of his million duties. There was another thing he did in the first season to show you what a Renaissance man he is. There was a day where Joseph Fine wasn't feeling well. And it was a long shot, a big, wide, long shot. And we had to shoot it. And David, who happens to have a beard like Joe Fine's, put on the costume, and that's him in the shot. So he won what we jokingly called the Golden Handmaid Award that day. And then he's won 3 times for different things that he's done.
That's
yeah. We have a T-shirt made for him that's the Golden Handmaid. With Bruce's endorsement and Lizzie's endorsement and our blessing and the studio and Hulu, he got to direct an episode this season and did a wonderful job. So we're so happy to have given that opportunity.
So he doubled for Joseph Fiennes in one of the shots of an early season of The Handmaid. So he's worked in the production for years and they've given him this chance to direct an episode in the finale season.
Amazing. Lovely.
Yeah. So that is the first 3 episodes of season 6 of The Handmaid's Tale. Premiere episodes of The Handmaid's Tale season 6 launch exclusively in Australia on SBS On Demand on Tuesday afternoons, and they screen on television on SBS Wednesdays. SBS has published a How to Watch article with all of the premiere dates and times, because they do change a little bit whether you stream or whether you watch TV. So when episode 4 lands at SBS On Demand, we will have the accompanying recap ready and waiting for you. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Sana Kadar, Natalie Hambly and Haiti Island. So good to have you back. Mm-hmm. And thank you for listening. It means everything to us that you choose to watch this show with us. And we'd love to know what you're thinking now that there are 3 episodes out into the world. Tell us what you're thinking of this final season and all of the character moments that it is revealing. Reach out on your preferred social media platform. We're on a bunch of them, some of them, not all of them. But yes, use the hashtag #EyesOnGilead and we will find your observations. You can find me at anythingbutfifi. Sana?
I'm at Sana_Kadar.
On what?
On Instagram. I think I still exist on Twitter. I don't really go on it anymore.
You can find me at Nat Hambly on Instagram and Threads.
And Haiti prefers the snail mail, so if you want to send a letter to SBS, go for it.
Or just don't contact her.
Or don't contact Haiti. Yeah, I'll pass on a message. I'll pass on the good ones.
These 3 lovely ladies will pass on any messages you'd like to get to me.
That's right. And if you like what you hear, please feel free to leave feedback and give us a rating on your favourite podcast app. It helps other people find the show. But Handmaids is dropping weekly, so, you know, that's a long time to wait between new episodes. So if you are watching along with us at SBS On Demand, I've got a great show that I'd love to recommend, and it's called Am I Being Unreasonable? It's a great mood breaker from Handmaids. Daisy May Cooper is a brilliant, messy and hilarious woman in this kind of comedy thriller. There's a woman trapped in grief and an obsessive friendship, and she's got maternal paranoia going on. So I just feel like it's going to be great for people who also love Handmaids. I know I love it. It's genius. And so there's 2 seasons you can get through.
I heartily second that. You know, a lot of people always, when they find out I work for SBS On Demand, they're like, oh, what's something I should watch on SBS On Demand? And often my recommendation is that show. So yes, it is fantastic. I
there
love
it. Yep, that's 2 votes for Am I Being Unreasonable? So we think you're going to love that.
Can I plug an episode of All in the Mind?
Sure, go for it.
My pod. We did a recent episode on the ick, the psychology behind, like, the ick, the feeling of disgust when dating. And I feel like, you know, we've been sus about Serena's feelings about High Commander Wharton. She's maybe getting the ick from him at the moment. But it goes into, you know, there is a lot of psychology behind why people sometimes get this disgust feeling. It can relate to attachment theory. It can relate to disgust sensitivity, all sorts of stuff. It's a really fun episode. So I recommend that if you want to listen to something else apart from us.
Through the lens of Serena and Wharton. I love it. Nice.
All right. Eyes on Gilead is an SBS Australia production, and we acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia, and we meet on the lands of the Cammeraygal people of the Eora Nation. This podcast is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time, don't let the bastards grind you down.
Don't be late for the tour. Auf Wiedersehen.